Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. My name is Louis Mendes. I hope you guys are well. We're gearing up on this week's pod for Friday evening's home game with Cheltenham Town at the Valley. Joining me to do this out first up, Mr. Nathan Muller. How you doing, Nath?
Living the dream, mate. It's coming home and then we're going back to reality against Cheltenham at home on Friday.
Yeah. Buzzing, mate. I don't know what was more boring, really, the first half of the England-Wales game or Cheltenham's entire season, but at least the England-Wales game picked up in the second half. Also joining us to look ahead to Friday evening's clash with the Robins is Sue Gallop. How you doing, Sue?
I'm all good. I was just wondering, Nath, if England don't win on Sunday, do you then suddenly switch allegiance to Germany?
Have you been talking to Peter Howarth, Sue? Have you been talking to Pete, have you?
No, I was just curious.
Switch allegiance to who? Because I think Germany would be going out, I think, by the looks of it.
Yeah. Well, that's after that, I don't know.
Probably Australia.
Well, you could come to England now that Tom Wallin has joined. Has decided to support England again now, I imagine. Yeah, that was an easy choice. He said he'll pick after full time. Isn't he? So England won 3-0. So presumably he's more English again now, Tom. But there we go. So on the if we get a chance, we might talk a little bit about the England Wales game later on. But obviously we're more focused on the Addicts. We're going to look ahead to Friday evening's game with Cheltenham in a few moments. Tom, we've got your tweets and emails. There's been a few little bits and pieces today actually that's worth chatting about. A tweet from Peter Varney. We'll talk about tweets from Ollie Groom. I think worth talking about as well. We've got, like I say, your emails on those subjects. We've got the Cup draw, the FA Cup draw. We did another exciting Twitter space to find out who we would be playing if we were to beat Stockport in the replay. So we'll have a little chat about who we, what massive side we draw in that. We've got Alicia Ndow from the Charlton women's team. They're playing Sheffield United at home on Sunday. They're on a bit of a good run as well. So we're going to hear from her. Mark Halliwell, who is our Cheltenham correspondent on this evening's pod, he's going to tell us all about the Robins as well towards the end of the show. So, well, let's look ahead first of all then to the game Friday. Obviously Friday, because just in case England finished second in their group and they would have been playing on this Saturday at 3 o'clock, there would have been very little interest in Cheltenham versus Cheltenham, I would suggest humbly, Nathan. But because they're not, it's now slightly annoying that we've got to play on a Friday night. The one Friday I have to be in Birmingham, so I'm going to be rushing back for the game. But yeah, so we're playing on a Friday night, despite the fact England aren't playing on Saturday. But, I mean, let's concentrate on the Addicts. We need some points here, don't we? You know, four league games without a win. 3 league wins in the last 15 doesn't sound good when you spell it out like that, does it?
No, it don't. I mean, I know there's some draws in there, but we've not won enough games. And I thought Cheltenham struggled early doors, but I know the last couple of games they've got some good results. A draw and a win against Wickham and Ipswich. So it seems like I'm saying it every week. Now it's going to be a tough game. I know it's the usual response that Garner will probably say, and it is going to be a tough game. But we need to win our home games because we're not winning away. So, yeah, we need to get some points on the board and arrest this slide, but see what players he can patch up together in terms of defensively. And, unlike, you know, hopefully we can defend set pieces better, because Saturday was woeful, which we spoke about on Sunday. So, going to be tough, but it's a game that we should be winning at home. Not even to do anything big in the league in terms of promotion or whatever, because I don't think that's happening, but you've got to be winning these games at home. So we need to get some wins on the board, and hopefully that will bring some confidence to the lads, because they certainly need it.
Yeah, they certainly do. I mean, it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, I've mentioned that the form and how far off it we are in terms of wins, Sue, and Nathan's mentioned that really we're probably not playing for anything. But as it stands, we're 6 points off the playoffs. You know, I remain pessimistic about the fact that we could catch up with the team in sixth, Barnsley at the moment, who've still got a game in hand on us. There's quite a few teams in between us and the playoffs who have one or two games in hand on us and more points than us. So that 6 points, realistically, is probably 7 or 8. But, you know, if we do pick up a win, if we are just about floating around within 4 or 5 points of the playoffs in January, who knows where we'll go. So that's why these games in between now and then, other than just for morale, because we got to go and watch them every week, are big for Charlton. And games, you know, this is, we're on a little bit of a run of games against teams who are down the lower echelons of League One. So we really need to make these count for us, which we haven't done over the last couple.
Yeah, I had a quick look at the table earlier, and it was just like, well, actually, they're only 2 points behind us, right? So, again, it's like, you talk about the possibility of getting into the playoffs or whatever, but actually, we're probably just as close to the bottom in terms of the points. So, I think we've talked about it numerous occasions. January transfer window is going to be massive for us. So, like the games that prior to that window, we've just got to try and like get anything out of them. Like it's really difficult because, as you know, I've always been the positive one, and I'm always like, we'll win, we'll be fine. I've completely lost my confidence, and I think even watching them in the cup game on Saturday, I was just like, I just don't even recognise my team anymore. Like, it's really sad to see, and I'm looking at these games now that where before I would have been really confident, oh yeah, we'll beat Cheltenham, they're like below us, blah blah blah. Now I'm like, I'll be happy with a point. It's I think it's one of them that it's just that whatever's going wrong, I don't know what it, well, there's lots of issues, isn't there, that's going wrong, but whatever's affecting the on the pitch situation, and people can blame Ben all they like, but we've had this situation really since Thomas took over. So I wouldn't place all of the blame on Ben. He doesn't do himself any favours when he does his post-match interviews, but I think it's on a deeper level than that. The whatever's going on behind the scenes is obviously having a big effect on the team that and their performances.
Yeah, we're seeing in terms of behind the scenes having an effect. I mean, that is partly due because of what squad we've ended up with there, Nathan. You know, I'm looking at the team news ahead of Saturday. Obviously, ahead of Friday, I should say. Ben's not doing his press conference until Thursday. We're doing the pod on Wednesday this week because everything's sort of shunted forward today. But you know, we know where we're like. We know, for example, Jaden Stockley's still got another couple of games on his suspension for that little forearm smash up at Port Vale. Luckily for us, because we've gone to a replay in the Cup, it means two of those are going to be Cup games, which actually works out quite nicely. So, I mean, the first big question for you, Naif, is, I mean, I was absolutely shocked that Chooks and Ike started against Stockport in the FA Cup, but, I mean, if he can start one game, I guess there's no reason to say he couldn't start another.
I mean, in terms of him starting a game, I mean, I know what you mean in terms of shock, but in some ways I wasn't. I thought there was no way he couldn't start Chucks. If he didn't start Chucks in that game, everyone's going to be going, how long does Chucks need to do more than 20 minutes? And obviously I don't know, you know, if what zones he's in terms of the red zones and stuff, but if you can't start a game against Stockport, we're more or less playing with, we've more or less got 1.5 strikers because it's only half of a striker. So I think he had to start, really, because it's a prime opportunity for Chooks to get some minutes in his legs, which he did. So I think he has to start again on Friday, because again, if he doesn't, what are you going to do? Shove young Kanu up there on his own, or, you know, or play with someone, Charlie Kirk up on his own, which didn't work wonders on Saturday. So I think he has to start Chooks. You know, he's got to. And he just, I mean, and like you said earlier, with Jaden at suspended, usually when your main number nine is out, you're sort of feeling it and you're going, oh, mate, we're missing him. But he ain't pulled up any trees this year. So you're looking around going, well, I know Jaden ain't playing, but is it going to make a massive bit of difference? Because every time I've seen Jaden recently, whether it's confidence or whatnot, we just don't look like scoring until Chucks comes on. So I don't know. I think he has to start Chucks on Friday, personally. But I guess we'll see, won't we?
Yeah, but all right, so what happens if we lose Chucks now to injury? Because that's always a risk any time he goes onto the field to play, unfortunately, especially when he starts games. You know, when he re-signed for the club last season, I think we played him for four starts in a row, something along those lines, and then that was him done for a couple of months. So, again, it comes back to the fact we signed him in the first place. I like Chucks as a fella and as a player, but obviously we know his limitations in terms of his fitness. So this is what Ben Garner will be having, this exact conversation that I'm having in his mind. He'll be like, if I lose him tomorrow, what am I going to do while Jaden's still out in particular? But then even when Jaden comes back and he's not playing very well, what on earth are we going to do?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because I'm in the kind of bring Chucks in off the bench camp. I mean, and I think it even showed on Saturday, starting the game, didn't really make, I didn't feel he made much of an impact. Whereas when you're bringing him on for the last sort of 15, 20 minutes, he'll always have that impact on the game. So it's then like, what do you do? Who do you play instead if you're not going to start him? Yeah, Nathan's right. He's got to start him, because what are the other options? You've got a couple of young lads coming through that you've got the potential of having another Joe Piggott that you completely ruin their confidence. Or like Charlie, and again, that doesn't work. So I do feel for Ben, like the depth, we just haven't got that depth, especially with, like, obviously Miles. I don't know when Miles is due back, but it's a difficult one, because you know Chucks has got it, but it not for, I mean, what did he play, 65 minutes the other day? It just wasn't working for me starting the game. So yeah, I don't know what Ben does. I don't think there's any straightforward answer to it, other than, like we keep saying, January transfer window. So yeah, it's a difficult one to answer, isn't it?
Yeah, Stephen Session went off injured, or we're hoping with cramp. Again, we'll find out more really when Ben Garner speaks tomorrow, I imagine, Nathan. But I mean, if he goes, we're bringing Dickie Chin back in. You know, he's been okay in times, but also at times he's struggled. So, again, I feel like every week we talk about players missing and then, well, who's going to come in. It always comes back to the same answer, really, doesn't it, in terms of the depth of the squad?
Yeah, and, you know, like you said, Richard Chin's come in and had a good couple of games, but, you know, they're obviously not ready yet, because otherwise Ben would have probably blooded him, you know, from the beginning, or he wouldn't have needed another left back. But if Sess is out, obviously Claydon came in, played a blinder against Plymouth, didn't he? And then he got found out a little bit, which isn't his fault. He's playing out of position, and he's gone to try and, you know, get some experience down at Bromley, even though he's not playing too regularly. But yeah, so you're going to throw Chin in again. And, you know, if he has a bad game, and like Sue said, it happened with Joe Piggott when he was thrust in there. When Carlin came in there, he looked like a rabbit in headlights when he first come on the scene. And, you know, if a youngster has one good game, the fans naturally think that's, they've set a level, so they can go that every single week. But young players have inconsistencies, you know. So if Sess is injured, you know, you've got Thomas, who's injured, and whoever else we've got. But it all goes back to the same conversation we had back before the transfer window closed, that we were light, and if we didn't strengthen in the right areas, which you're inevitable going to get injuries and suspensions, especially in the pack schedule that we've got this season, you need cover. Like, and, you know, not to the extent of maybe like an Ipswich, where they've got huge, you know, a huge squad and a very good squad. You can dip the youngsters in and out, but not to an extent where they're playing Saturday, Tuesday, week after week if they're not 100% ready. So if Sess is injured, then that's a big concern for me, because our defence is stretched as it is. And again, we've got another replay, another game that we don't need, and cup games. But then you've got, it's a double-edged sword, because we're not doing very well in the league. So you want to try and make up for that in the cup, to have a bit of a feel-good factor. But then you can't play your strongest team, and then you might lose that. And then it's just a slippery slope. So yeah, I'm hoping, fingers crossed, that Sess is all right, because I think he's a very good player and he offers something very different.
Yeah, I guess the only other question mark majorly is whether Maynard Brewer continues ahead of Craig McGivray. I suggest he hasn't done too much wrong with the couple of games he's had so far. Sue, would you like to see Ash keep the place in, or would you like to see Craig come back in now, assuming he's sort of ready?
I think we need to stick with Ash, if I'm honest, because as we've been talking about Ash for years, haven't we, really? So I think even when he was in the, like, a lot younger, like, people were sort of bigging him up as the next big thing in terms of goalkeeping. I think Ben Roberts was always a big up, like, sort of fan of his when Ben was with us. So I think you've got to stick with Ash. If you're looking at him as a longer term option for us, or even potentially looking at another Nicky Pope situation where you're selling him to a bigger club, I think you've got to look at him being the next choice under Jojo when Jojo's back. But yeah, I'd stick with Ash. He hasn't, as much as I've seen, he hasn't really done a lot wrong. I think his defence lets him down, but I think he's definitely one for the future.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see if he does continue on Saturday. I mean, Sue mentioned it then. So Cheltenham sit only 2 points behind us. They're sitting in 18th. Defeat on Friday could see us drop at least a place. Who knows what else could happen? I think Morecambe play on Friday as well. They're much, much lower than us, actually. But I'm not concerned about relegation. We're 10 points above the relegation zone. That's not a problem, is it, Nathan?
You'd like to think not, but I think if we don't arrest the... I know, listen, I'm not one of the negative ones. I'm similar to Sue in a way that I'm usually quite positive, but we've got to be careful in the fact that we can't be too arrogant enough to think that we're too good to get dragged into it. I know it's 10 points, but we go three wins out, you know, without three games without a win, then it gets a little bit hairy, doesn't it? So we just need to try and get through to January and pray there's some money tree sort of growing somewhere in SE7, and we can strengthen, because, you know, Ben needs it, you know, the squad need it, the fans need it, you know, just need a little bit of a lift, a little bit of fresh blood to try and raise it and have a little bit of a go. I'm not expecting, you know, a late charge to the playoffs. I know we're only 6 points away, but we just need to get some confidence back, get a couple of wins under our belt, get everyone back in a bit of a positive frame of mind and just try and steer clear of it, because I mean, last year we were flirting with it a little bit, and then obviously Johnny done a remarkable job and got us out of it. So by any stretch, we're not out of the woods, because we know what this league is like and it's unforgivable. And when you're dropping points to the likes of Burton, and, you know, if we don't get a point against, or get some points on Friday, people winning around us, against us, it's only going to go one way. So we just need to try and get a win from somewhere, you know, like just a 1-0. Because, I mean, I was looking at it, that last time we won at home in the league was Portsmouth, wasn't it? Which was, what, the 17th of October in the league. That's like six... I know we had cup games in there, but 6-7 weeks ago is a long time to remember that you've won at home. And it's, like I say, you had cup games in there, but we just need that little bit of positivity back, a little bit of a feel-good factor coming into with the World Cup. You know, hopefully that will change everyone's spirits or whatever, but we just need to get points on the board, mate, and that's all we have to do. Just don't know, no matter how we do it, how we get it, we just get points on the board and then just look upwards and onwards.
Well, let's have a look at a couple of emails that are coming in now. Dean Lane has emailed pretty much referencing three subjects I wanted to talk about between now and sort of the halfway point of the show. It says, hi, guys. First of all, I don't think that Garner is under pressure from the majority of fans. There is a few moaning, but that's typical Charlton. So that relates to over the last weekend, it sounds like the story was put out by Alan Nixon, suggesting perhaps that Garner is under a little bit of pressure. It was talking about how much of a payout he'd get if he were to be relieved of his services at the Valley. And that's really the first time we've heard anything along those lines. Probably not a surprise, considering, you know, the form's not great, as we've spoken about. He's spoken out against the way the club was run when he first came in as well, which we heard after the Port Vale game. Dean also goes on to reference a Peter Varney tweet, which we'll talk about in a second, and also Ollie Grimm, which we'll also talk about in a second. But first of all, I mean, you said it, Sue. If he is under pressure, you know, he's not the first manager who's come under pressure in the last couple of years. You know, since Thomas has come in, what are we on, four managers now, is it? You know, Bowyer officially was here as well. And then Adkins, obviously we've had Jacko, now we're on Garner. So he's certainly gone through a few. And we know, I think it's fair to say that when things go wrong, Thomas likes to blame, you know, other people, not himself, when things have gone wrong, whether that's on the pitch or sort of in the back room as well with ticket fiascos and whatnot. So can you believe that he could be under a little bit of pressure? Do you think that Thomas would be wise or unwise to look for a change of manager at this point?
I think obviously we've got no personal connection with Ben as we've had with Johnny and Bo, so I don't know what sort of person he is. I've sort of said at the weekend he sounds like a decent guy. I don't always agree with what he says in his post-match interviews in terms of blaming refs and things like that, but then you get other people coming back to you, like Swindon fans have come back to me and said like he wasn't a great person to be around. So it's difficult to know whether actually, like, let's get rid and have a clean slate, because as we know, Thomas's decision making always hasn't been the greatest. Who would he get in? Who would want to come to us? But if he is trying to sort of build something, and I do actually like the little digs at the way the club's being run, that actually we do feel a little bit for him that he isn't being given the resources he needs to build a stronger side. Again, it's a difficult one because I don't feel like I know Ben enough as a manager to feel like, yeah, he can get through this. Like, he's got it in him. It was even with Nigel Atkins, we'd said, like, he's got the history, he's got the experience. Ben hasn't got that. So you can't even go, oh, well, he did wonders there, or he got them promoted. We haven't got that with Ben, so it's a really difficult thing to kind of go with a manager that's almost come from, well, nowhere really, like non-league, lower league, and then feel like he's the right person, because at the moment it doesn't feel like he is, but he could be. I've probably not really made much sense there, have I?
No, I get what you mean, Sue. I mean, results are what matters, Nath, you know, and There is a point, you know, no matter what sort of team you've been put, if there's same old problems reoccurring, whether it be defensively or, you know, not creating enough with the position we have, or not taking our chances when they do come along, which we seem to fluctuate between the two of those sometimes, yeah, so at some point the manager has to take responsibility for that as well, and he does. You know, he does point the finger, you know, like a lot of people in football do. He does look for the odd excuse here and points out where things have gone wrong. But also, he has demanded that they'll have to improve, and at times they haven't this season. So he will be putting himself under pressure as well to make sure that he's not in a position where Thomas will want to relieve him of his services.
Yeah, of course it will, and I think and certain elements of his interviews in terms of the refereeing decisions and stuff is an element of desperation and frustration, and it's an all, you know, straight after a game, you know, we're all frustrated with the result, and fortunately for us, we don't get a microphone shoved in our face straight after the game, and, you know, emotions are high, so I get it, but I think those decisions do sort of even out and swings and roundabouts and stuff. So, yeah, of course he's going to feel the pressure. But, I mean, there will come a time if results, you know, if we're not winning games, and like I said earlier, we're sliding down the table, then we're going to come to a junction where we, you know, Thomas might have to make that call. But for me, that's not now. I don't think changing managers frequently is going to get us anywhere. You know, he's come in to try and build an identity. He hasn't been given all the tools to do so. And I just think it goes back to, I think if you keep trying to do something over and over and expecting a different result, then it's a sign of insanity for me. And it's like, I think we'll have a lot of, let's say Ben does go, right? I think we'll have a lot of people will be interested in terms of the pool of the club and the resources, not the resources, but the training ground, etc., etc. But there, you could have some people looking at it and go, well, how long am I going to get? You know, nowadays everything's instantaneous. You know, we have to be winning and we have to be building a squad in one window, which is not going to happen. We had, I think some of us, and I'm guilty of it sometimes. Sometimes I look back to Paoli and what he did, which was incredible, to build that squad and what we did that season, and think it's easy to do and it can happen every single time, which it's not. It was like a one-off that Paoli achieved that through what he did with the players, his man management, everything. It was unbelievable. But that's not going to happen every single summer. And I just think if we keep changing, we get rid of Ben and then we're going to get a new manager in. He might not like any of the players that Ben's brought in, so we can start from scratch. And we haven't got the financial clout or resources to do that, like in Ipswich. Go out and buy the best players in the league and whatnot. So, of course, he's going to come under pressure. Of course he is. No manager is immune from pressure or criticism. I just think, just if he gets a little bit of help, and then we can assess the situation. Because even he said at the beginning of the season, didn't he? He's like, if we reach the playoffs, we'd be overachieving. It took me back a little bit to hear that, but he's been proved right. If we're being honest with ourselves, he's proved himself right in terms of that. In terms of that comment.
Yeah. Right. Let's have a look at some of the fan comments then on the Ben Garner situation. Michael said, I think we should keep him on the basis that we can't keep changing manager. Also, the last time we replaced a manager, the options suddenly became a lot less appealing. John said he has to be under pressure because of our poor away performances and defensive displays, but sacking him won't help anyone. He hasn't received the financial support promised, and that is only one person's fault. Roger says, not sure it's all down to the manager. Players are mostly poor, and the chairman won't open his purse to buy anybody half decent. I would like to think it's mostly down to Thomas Sandgaard. If so, let's hope he sells up and goes, allows someone to come in and help. London Innit Geezer said that Garner's bound to be under pressure. What's new? Dan said, I love Garner, but the problem is his playing style doesn't fit the players, and the investment he has been given doesn't allow me to fully assess him as a manager. Come the transfer window, we better see some action from Sandgaard, or I won't be surprised if Garner comes out against him. A couple of emails on it as well. Well, one email, Jeff said, Jeff's email is on the next subject, actually, so that's probably a good time to bring forward the next subject, of course. So rumours abound, as they often do. Peter Varney got tongues wagging earlier on this afternoon, obviously the former CEO of the club. Tweeted, if you care about Charlton, even if you feel disillusioned at present, please buy your ticket for the Brighton Cup game and come with a mindset to create a passionate atmosphere, as it's very important to showcase the club on that night. Now, that's got hairs running, Sue. You know, I think we've been in this process before, haven't we? Where, you know, it gets to a stage where I think a lot of fans would like to see a change in ownership at the club, and then all the rumours start and the little hints here and there, you know. And Peter Viney's a clever man. He would have known exactly what he's saying with his tweet. And, you know, we've seen, you can only describe it, I guess, as a bit of a message to try and pick up the interest of the Charlton fans and make him believe that there's probably someone out there, and probably start to up the pressure on people who'd like to see Sandgaard go, that there's a way out here, and maybe if they can turn up for the Brighton game, maybe there'll be someone there or someone watching who would be interested in buying the club. That's the message he's given there, basically. I can't see it being anything else.
Yeah, I mean, I think if anyone was interested in buying the club, Peter's, with the history that he's got and the kind of consultancy work that he does, he would be the go-to guy. So if there was any sniff of any interest from anyone, I would think that Peter would be one of the first to know about it. I mean, I think the Brighton game in itself is a big game. I know some people were a little bit like, oh, Brighton. But at the end of the day, they're a Premier League club now. We aren't anymore. I was thinking about it earlier. I was like, still got an air of arrogance about us, that it's almost like we deserve to be higher than we are or better than we are. Well, actually, those days are long gone. And I think anything, obviously, if Pete knows something, he's not going to be able to outly say, right, someone's coming to watch. But that would be his way of kind of drumming up some excitement and getting, because as we know, like, night games at the Valley are amazing. Like, we love a night game at the Valley. So that's your opportunity to show someone that could be interested in what you're buying into, not a Saturday Stockport County at home, like, what, 5,000 people or whatever it was. Yeah, that's our opportunity, I think, to really sell ourselves as a club. I don't know what Thomas's views on at the moment, but I think it's got to get to the point where he must know that he can't keep funding a club that's losing money, and will continue to lose money, particularly if we're not getting those results and we do get dragged into a relegation battle. So he needs to think seriously if there is people, like interested parties, and they're coming along to that game, then we really need to show them what we're about as a fan base, because it's always been commented on, hasn't it, that one of the main selling points for our club is the support, the fan base, where we've come from, where we've dragged the club up from. There's not a lot of clubs that have got that history that we've got in terms of like nearly going out of business, the fans putting in the money to drag it back out, going back to the Valley, all of that stuff. We've still got that fan base. So whoever comes along needs to see that on that night. So I would 100% back up what Pete's saying. Like, if you can get there, get there.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, obviously, with that message being put out, you know, by Peter Varney, he's got people trying to guess who may be involved in what. You know, Jeff's emailed about Charlie Meffin, who was he said he was the chief financial officer at Sunderland. Yeah, I can't remember exactly what his role was at Sunderland, but he was a bit of a David Brent character, according to Jeff, and he was spotted at the Valley last week. We don't know if there's anything in that. We don't know if that means he would be part of anything, or if it was just a coincidence, or if he's someone who could introduce people. I know nothing about it, but it certainly sets hairs running, because people don't know who anything could involve at this early stage. But, you know, like I say, we've been through this cycle many times before, certainly over the last decade, in terms of people who's going to buy the club or which way it's going to go. So yeah, we go again, as we used to say under Powley when we lost the game. One other thing that happened today, before we get a couple more emails, Ollie Groom announced that his time at the club had officially come to an end at the end of October, in circumstances which he couldn't really talk about, but he, you know, just sending his thanks to everybody involved, you know, the fans and all that, with his time at the club over the last 10 years. And obviously we send him our best wishes. Now, someone else tweeted, Dan Burke, someone who used to work at the club, suggesting that Ollie was given a big out-of-court settlement. Now, I've heard similar from you know, the football clubs are very leaky, I'm afraid to say, so I have heard similar. It goes to show, and we've spoken about the difficult work environment at the Valley, and how chaotic it is behind the scenes these days. You know, it's been one of my bugbears, hearing about different bits and pieces for the last however many few years now. It's chaos behind the scenes, you know. And I remember at the end of last season, at the Player of the Year dinner, we were talking about stuff like this, and I don't think people wanted to hear it, but we have been hearing stuff like this for a while, and I do think it's coming out in terms of the football on the pitch now as well, because stuff goes wrong behind the scenes. Eventually it leads to bad stuff happening on the pitch. You don't get as much money in as well. That plays a part in it. We're seeing all that now, Nath. And I mean, this latest saga that's come out, with obviously Ollie being let go, and like we say, reports he's received this big payment, it doesn't bode well on the ownership and the leadership at the club.
No, it doesn't. And do you know what? Whatever that number he got, he fully deserves it. It was a massive one, personally, because, you know, Ollie's a great lad. You know, he lives and breathes Cholton and done so much for the club, in terms of, if you look back at the Matt Southall issue, and, you know, I'm sure he'll be sorely missed around the club in terms of his work and as a person. So I'm delighted that he's got a new gig. And he's been remunerated correctly. And but in terms of the, you know, behind the scenes, it's just frustrating. You just look at it and go, just why can't we just be like a normal club? You know, I know every club has ups and downs, and there's rifts between players and whatnot. You're always going to get it. It's life. You get it in every walk of life. But it's just the little snippets you get, like you say, mate, and it's just frustrating. And obviously when we're not doing well, it gets amplified, and I don't know, it's just frustrating, and it's demoralising a little bit. And I think Brownie said it on the far post on Monday, I think it was. And it was just like, it gets to a point where you're past caring, but it's just you're showing apathy now, and it's just, and that's the sad state of affairs. People aren't coming anymore. People don't like going anymore, and it's like you say, whatever happens in the background does make its way on the pitch, and then it affects everyone, and that harmony isn't there, and that's the sad thing, because. I was looking at it on Saturday in the crowd, and it weren't, you know, and obviously Sue knows it, years ago, even when we had Guy Luz on, like, there was loads of us going. When the old Lib Club, they used to be, like, I used to go with, like, 20 people. Now, I'll go on my own. I meet people I meet a couple of people in the fans bar and that, but no one wants to go anymore, mate.
That's more of a damning insight into your personality, I'm afraid, Nath.
Yeah, that is very true as well.
Yeah, no, like, obviously the crowds are low. We know that. In fact, David sent an email saying, can you stop playing the Wembley playoff final excerpt during the broadcast? It's getting extremely tedious listening to that winning goal, knowing how far the club has to go to get anywhere near it, anywhere near to close to such an occasion. It's like rubbing salt into an open wound. Stop it. Yeah, I do need to make some new jingles. I'll start playing the Christmas jingle next week. We'll have it one more time this week, I'm afraid, Dave. And then an email from Carl, again, very worried about how easy it is for us to slip out of form and go on these long winless runs again. I appreciate that Garner has been sold a dud and had not had the investment to make this team competitive at the top of the table, but I don't think he's doing enough to find a way of us being an attacking threat or being able to defend simple set pieces. The game on Friday night is massive in terms of needing a result, both for us as a set of fans and for Garner to keep the wolf away from the door, because we know that Sandgaard will sack managers rather than admit fault. Right, finally, during the week, obviously we know we're going to have to play a replay against Stockport next Wednesday night. It's going to be on TV, ITV4. It's also going to be on BBC Radio London, full commentary as well, if you want to tune in for that one. But if we do get through, well, it means that either us or Stockport will play someone in the FA Cup. Now, the FA Cup draw was on Monday. We did it for the League Cup draw, didn't we, a Twitter space. We thought we'd do a live watch-along again, so you can listen to the excitement when our team was drawn out again.
Rachel, well, she's giving him a good twirl in there, and we're getting ready for the first ball to come out. So in we go. Charlton are number 56, if I remember rightly, and the first one that comes out is number 30. So number 30 is Preston North End. Don't particularly want this one, do we, lads?
No thanks.
And the next one out is number 17. So Preston is against Huddersfield, so we've missed that one. Next one is
avoided Huddersfield as well.
25 Middlesbrough. This is another one I'd be happy not to have. And the ball coming out is number 8, which is Brighton and Hove Albion. So we won't get in Brighton twice in the space of a couple of weeks. Right, righty-righty's back in there. Number 61, this is Chesterfield away, a non-league away gate.
Absolutely not.
And it's against, is that 41? Yeah, 41, and that is West Bromwich Albion. So the balls are coming out thick and fast here. We're still waiting for the addicts. Righty-righty's got number 23. That's Man City, right? This is the one we want, boys.
Oh, this could be a good one. This could be a good one.
Come on, Rachel. Number 12, not us. That is Chelsea. Oh, they keep.
Oh, every time. Wasn't that the same in the last one?
Yeah.
All these big clubs together. How many? The Carabao Cup one was the same.
56. Charlton or Stockport are out. So who are we going to get? Who are we going to get? It's number 63. We will be at home to Walsall. I very nearly swore there. We will be at home to Walsall. Get us knocked out right now.
Yeah.
Oh,
no.
Goodness.
Why?
Me. Goodness me. What on earth?
Although we've beaten them once this season, haven't we, in the Cup? Come on.
One of our League Cup conquests. Walsall, I can't believe it. Boreham Wood against Accrington Stanley. At least they're equally as disappointed as well. Well, let's react to that. I'm not going to do the rest of the draw. Spurs, who's Spurs getting? Spurs are at home to 52. That was quite close to us as well. Spurs against Portsmouth. Right, well, we don't need to go through the rest of it, do we? Lewis, Walsall at home, buzzing?
Not really, mate, no. A few people text me then saying, well, this puts the scale of it. A non-Charlton supporting friend texts me saying, good draw for you, which shows he has absolutely no clue how we feel. And Peacock texts me saying, wasn't even worth putting the telly on. So that sums up the mood, I think. Yeah, not ideal, is it? But I mean, we've got to get past Stockport first anyway.
Yeah.
But you know, we don't get to the third round very often, and when we do, we don't tend to get any glamour ties. I was set on us getting a decent tie, but no, well, didn't seem to happen. But Walsall no mugs, are they, even if we have to play them?
Yeah, well, we were the draw that came out. Man City Chelsea came out, and the very next draw was Cheltenham or Stockport against bloody Walsall. Let us know what you guys are thinking. Tweet us at Cheltenham Live your reaction to the fact that we might get to play Walsall if we get beyond Stockport in this year's FA Cup. This is a bit like when England got to the final, having played all those farmers, isn't it, on the way through to the Euros, basically. Tom, your thoughts on that?
I don't know. I've got the Portugal-Uruguay game on now. So good news that our ball came out nice and early, so I can get that done. But yeah, if you're really dragging me off mute to talk about it, then cup run's still on, isn't it? We've got to beat Stockport and Walsall, and then we'll get a glamour tie against, I don't know, Chesterfield or someone. So yeah, on to the next round.
I think that's the closest I've ever come to swearing in a live broadcast, Sue, when they pulled out bloody Walsall. I could have thrown my phone at the TV at that point. What a bloody disappointment that was.
It was always going to happen. I think we predicted it all the way. Well, it was like we'll either get an amazing draw and get knocked out by Stockport in the replay, or we'll just end up with another awful, boring, pointless away trip or home trip, whatever it is. And when it come out, because I was listening to the live broadcast, as soon as it come out, I was like, I did swear, and I turned it off straight away. Turned the TV over, turned the Twitter off. I was like, mate, not having it. It's just us, isn't it? I know people were talking about on the live thing, oh, Spurs, blah, blah, blah. Well, we've had Spurs in fairly recent history, haven't we? We went to Spurs
about 2012, maybe.
Look at that. Recent, it's like 11 years ago, whatever. But as a rule, we tend to get quite crap draws, don't we? So I wasn't surprised, but again, you hold on to that little glimmer of hope that you might get a Liverpool away or like Arsenal away or whatever. But yeah, Warsaw, brilliant.
Yeah, it is what it is, which should be our club motto, because it always relentlessly is what it is, unfortunately, with the Addicts. Right, let's have a quick break. Cover your ears, David. When we come back, we're going to be looking ahead to the game with Cheltenham once more.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers with a header. And it's Jones.
Yes!
Yes! Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero! Here at Wembley!
Cheltenham Live.
Right, welcome back to Cheltenham Live. This is the Big and Match preview. Just before we turn our attention back to that home game with Cheltenham on Friday night, we're just going to hear from the women's team as well. They're in real good form at the moment. 3 wins in a row in the League and Cup. Now defender Alicia Ndau came to speak to the club on our behalf earlier on today to look back at those 3 games and ahead to Sunday's home game with Sheffield United.
Yeah, it's great. Obviously, going to Durham away is a tough place to go. So I think starting off our run to go there, get 3 points, even though it's a tough game. we were happy with the performance, but then obviously to go to Crystal Palace away and then pick up another 3 points, and then going to Bristol, obviously at home in the cup, although it was in the cup, it's still good to keep that momentum going. And obviously our result against them last time didn't go how we wanted, but it showed that we've made improvements over the last couple of weeks to go there and get the points, regardless of it being in the cup or the league.
Yeah, plenty of goals being scored. You could also say plenty of goals being scored by the centre-backs as well.
Yeah.
Kira's skills, and obviously looking back to your goal against Sunderland, which nicks the point, the 3 points, as you say, right back in September. Can you kind of like walk us through that moment again and what that was like for you?
To be fair, I still don't really know much about it, because I feel like it's always a long running joke about me not being able to like use my head, especially in attacking situations. But it was a lovely ball in from Rowan, so it just landed on my head nicely, and I didn't have much to do with it, and it just went in the back of the net. But I think it's good that not even just the forwards are scoring. Obviously Skills is second top goal scorer at the moment as well, so that's quality, so everyone's contributing.
And finally, like you said, you want to kind of keep that winning momentum going. Another tough test this weekend, Sheffield United. What are you expecting them to bring?
Obviously, we know that Sheffield are a brilliant side. They've been in the league for a number of years now. But I think as a team, we're just going to take each game as it comes, go into the game, obviously wanting to get the 3 points, but obviously building on our performance. Obviously, we've had great results over the last three games, so I think it's just improving on that as a team.
There you go. Thanks to Alicia for saying that. For us there, having a little chat with Andrea for us. So looking ahead to the game, so it's Sunday, 2 o'clock down the Oakwood against the Blades. It should be a good game. Let's see if the Addicts can continue this little run of form they're on. They're doing quite well at the moment. Obviously spoke about that win at Palace recently, but they've had a couple of good results as well, including that Conti Cup win over Bristol City last weekend. Let's hopefully see if they can continue this winning run on Sunday. Now, Cheltenham coming to the Valley this Friday evening. Obviously, as I said earlier, the game's been brought ahead because of the potential clash with an FA with an England World Cup game, which has never happened now, but it's too late to change it back, really, isn't it? It wouldn't make any sense. So we will be playing the Robins on Friday night. Now, Mark Halliwell covers the club from a commentary and a newspaper point of view. I've seen him at a few of our games between the two sides, and I spoke to him yesterday in the evening to just have a little chat and find out a little bit more about the Robins season. Asked him how pleased he has been, or disappointed perhaps, with the start to the campaign so far.
Well, it's picked up. It's been very up and down, to be honest with you. When Michael Duff left, it was always going to be a big job for Wade Elliott, but the fixture list didn't help him right at the very start. First three games were Peterborough, Barnsley and Portsmouth. So there was always going to be a tough start, and they lost all three of those, and then also went out of the Carabao Cup 7-0 to Exeter at home. So that wasn't the best of starts, but they managed to pick up, and it has been a bit up and down though. It's almost been a case of where they take one step forward and then all of a sudden they'll take one or two steps back, and it's been a bit like that. But lately, they've done okay. 8 points out of the last 12 is pretty good. I mean, going out of the FA Cup to Alvechurch was an absolute disaster. That was probably the most humiliating result I've ever seen in my time watching Cheltenham, and didn't exactly endear Wade to the supporters. There were chants around the ground at the end of the game saying that fans wanted him out. But last four games, they've picked up, as I say, 8 points out of 12, and also knocking Forest Green out of the Papa John's Trophy on penalties has also given him a bit of a lift and given everybody a bit of a lift. So all in all, they're coming into Friday's game, I think, in a pretty good frame of mind.
Well, what were the expectation levels like at the start of the season? Obviously, last year, I'm all right in saying that was Cheltenham's highest ever league finish. So was there expectation that they could continue along that vein? Was it just about staying in League One at the moment?
It was their highest ever league finish, yeah, 15th in League One. And they've actually improved their league position every season since they came back into the league in 2015-16, winning the National League under Gary Johnson. But it was always going to be difficult because, I mean, Michael Duff's not a fool. Michael Duff, I think, looked at it and thought, right, we're 15th in League One. I don't think we're going to go any higher than 15th in League One. My stock's at the highest place it's going to be. Barnsley have come in for me, so I'm going to go. And I think that was the way of it. And I think any Cheltenham fan thinking, oh yeah, we're going to get higher than 15th, we're going to keep it going, I think is stretching it a bit far, to be honest with you. I think staying in League One is really where we're looking at. If Cheltenham can finish above that line again, then that'll be great, and it'll just strengthen the club again going forward. And I think if Wade can keep them up, then I think that'll be satisfactory for the board and for those sort of running the club. But there are supporters out there thinking, oh, why are we just trying to stay up? Why can't we? But you know, Cheltenham have got one of the smallest budgets in the division, so staying up in the division, I think, for the time being, is always going to be the main aim.
Mm. And what about Wade Elliott then? So as you said, he had pretty big shoes to fill when he came in and took over after Duff went up to Barnsley. But I think this is his first sort of senior managerial role, isn't it? So how has he sort of taken to the job?
It is his first managerial role. As I say, it's been a bit rocky for him. There's a few of the supporters who have already nailed their colours to the mast and said, nope, we're not having him one bit, which is a bit unfair, I think, after 20-odd games. He's struggled a little bit, if I'm being honest. He's struggled a little bit with connecting with the supporters. I mean, some of his interviews, he doesn't come across, you know, his interviews can be a bit dour, and some of the answers to some of the questions that he's asked after games have left supporters thinking, what's he on about, as if they haven't seen the same game as him. And that's always an issue, I think, and it's this usual thing. It's this thing that I never understand, is the fact that he's not the most demonstrative on the touchline. And you know how supporters seem to want their managers to wave their arms about and point a lot and shout a lot. And Wade doesn't really do that. Some supporters thinking, oh, he doesn't care, he hasn't got any passion for it and all this sort of stuff. But I think that's a load of nonsense, to be honest with you. He's warming to it. As he goes along, he's warming to it. He's getting better with that sort of thing. And as I say, the last few results have been very encouraging. And the beating Wickham, drawing with Ipswich in recent weeks have been very encouraging. But he's just had those couple of real rocks in the road, the Exeter 7-0 and the Alvechurch Cup defeat, to cope with. But to be fair to him, each time those rocks have come along, he's sort of overcome them quite well.
Yeah, and you've mentioned that I've got my eye on that point they've just picked up at Ipswich. I mean, that'll be the sort of challenge that Charlton will be wary of, because they haven't done particularly well against teams that come and try and stop Charlton playing. Is that the way that Cheltenham will set up on the road against a so-called bigger club?
I think they may well do. I think they may well do. I mean, they don't tend to go away very much from the three at the back, and the sort of the 3-5-2 or the 3-4-1-2, as it has been in recent weeks. They're not going to suddenly come out and field six or seven defenders. They're not going to do that. And I mean, Ipswich was very much a sort of bodies on the line performance. Ipswich had something like 29 shots on goal, but they only had four on target. So that sort of tells you really that Cheltenham did a pretty good job of holding them at bay. I think it'll be that. I can't see them going too far away from that sort of setup, really. I mean, to be honest, the game at the Valley last year, Cheltenham, that was one of Cheltenham's best performances in a long time, when they came to the Valley and won 2-1 at the start of last season. And they'll be looking for something similar, obviously. But I think first of all, it'll be set up to be hard to beat, and that's what they've done. Defensively, they've been pretty good this season, bar that 7-0, of course.
Mm-hmm, yeah. So finally, who are the danger men that the Addicts fans will need to be wary of this weekend? Obviously, you know, Alfie May caught a lot of headlines last season. He seems to be plodding along okay with five goals in all competitions so far this season. Is he still the main man for Cheltenham?
Very much so. Very much so. He is the talisman. He's the main man. He's everything. And going back to sort of almost his home turf, really. I remember I remember interviewing after the game last year, and he was saying, oh, this is my home turf. And he had half his family were there watching that game last season. Yeah, he's very much the main man. He's just come back from injury, and Cheltenham need him to be fit. Cheltenham need him to stay fit for as much of the season as possible, because without him, they've really struggled. Alongside him, he's got Daniel Lunderloo, who's on loan from Southampton. He's quite a handful. He's one of those players who, you know, defenders don't know what he's going to do next, but he's also one of those players who I don't think knows himself what he's going to do next. So he's quite unpredictable. And the other one to look out for is Ryan Broom, who's come back to the club. Obviously came back from Peterborough in the summer, just getting up to speed. Hadn't played a lot of football when he came back, but he's just coming up to speed now, and scored against Ipswich, and also was outstanding in the game at Forest Green in the Papa John's Trophy the other day. Scored and converted the penalty, which ended up winning the game. So, yeah, he's another one. And at the back, defensively, Caleb Taylor, who's on loan from West Brom, been very, very good, highly rated at West Brom. He's more than held his own against several decent strikers this season, and he'll be ready for another test against the Addicts on Friday.
There we go. Thanks to Mark for joining me over Zoom yesterday and having that little chat. So they will pose a threat, I guess, Nath, because they have just had a couple of results now. I mean, if we're looking purely at league results, they're unbeaten in four. And I mean, I've got my eye on that point they went and took at Ipswich a couple of weeks ago. You know, that's a massive result for them on the road, and they've beaten a Wickham side who can be quite tricky in this division as well recently. So, yeah, anyone who thinks we're in for an easy ride, A, obviously hasn't been watching us this season, but B, probably doesn't know that they've picked up slightly recently.
Yeah, they obviously they got, I don't know if Wade Elliott is still there, but I know he was under a bit of pressure early on. I think they got thumped at home by someone, I can't remember who it was now.
Lost 7-0 against Exeter, but he is still there and picking up a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, like I said earlier, it's going to be a difficult. They've got some good players. They've got Dan Lunderloo. I think he's the old Southampton striker, I think. I don't know if he scored against us last year when we played him, Dan Lunderloo. I can't remember. And Ola Yinka, the old Arsenal boy as well. So they've got good players. But again, I said it, you know, on paper, we've got, attacking wise, we've got threats all over the pitch, and it should be a game that we'll be winning. But again, Saturday, I went there really full of confidence against Stockport and thought we'd win quite, you know, comfortably. Not thinking 3-4s or anything, but I'd, you know, good 2-0 or 3-1 or something. And the set pieces had other ideas. So yeah, it's going to be a hard game, but it's a game that we need to be winning. There's no ifs or buts about it. We have to be winning these games, especially home games.
Yeah, and I mean, it's coincided with, obviously, it's the closest we're getting to the 30th anniversary of Back to the Valley. I mean, Nathan couldn't add this up when we were talking about this earlier on, Sue, but it's always an important landmark for the club, especially now we're going through a stage of people talking perhaps about change again at the top, and we know how far things can go wrong when clubs aren't run properly. It ended up with Charlton being stuck, you know, playing over at Sellers Park, playing over at West Ham for a number of years. But at the same time, when we get to this anniversary, it's always nice to sort of reminisce about the battle that the fans had to get us back here, and obviously the people that, you know, played a big part in owning the club as well. Obviously, Roger Alwyn was back at the training ground this week, which was a really good video the club put out. But memories like this, Sue, this time of year must be particularly special for people who were going to games a bit more often than you know, myself, who was about 3 at the time, and Nathan, who was obviously was in his 80s, so was too old to go to games at that point.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like, I thought you was going to say people of a certain age, like myself.
That quite nicely, actually. So,
yeah, you did. I was quite pleased with that, though, after the conversation we had earlier. I was 16 the first game back, and we, as a family, we had quite a big involvement in the return. Like, my mum and my stepdad were both volunteers, helping getting the valley ready. We'd come up with a little fundraising scheme. I don't know, I think I've talked about it before, where we'd a group of girls, we had a little training session with the first team down at Sparrows Lane with Curbs and Gritty, and we raised some money towards it. Like, fans chucked money in. We obviously had the valley party. It was it's as a time of year, it's one of the highlights of the season for me, because it was such special memories. Like, even during the march, I mean, my mum and stepdad were at the Valley till like 1 o'clock in the morning the night before the game, and then they were back down there at like 7 o'clock the next morning, getting like helping getting the ground ready, and they were still painting and doing, like, I think the car park was still being tarmacked or something. There was still like proper last minute stuff being done. I went on the march to the ground, and it was just a massive sense of togetherness and that family feel that we talk about, that we kind of sort of said we continued to have properly up until maybe when Roland bought us, where that started to slip away a bit. But it does, it's those, like, we've got the dinner tomorrow night, which I'm really looking forward to. We've got quite a lot of old players coming, even like more recent, like Jan's coming, Jacko's coming. So it's again a big celebration of what people did to get us to where we are now. Because, like you said earlier, like, things could have been very different. We might not have had a football club to support if it wasn't for people like Roger Alwyn, the board at the time, the fans. Like, we had the Valley Investment Plan where people could pay money towards the return. So I think, yeah, it is a massive celebration, and I almost feel like it's sort of in the background a little bit now more recently, because there aren't as many of us left that were there then. And even those that are have kind of got a little bit disillusioned with the club and don't return as much. Even staff-wise, you're talking about people going, when you're talking about Ollie. Like, my mum's been working on a match day for, this is her 30th season. We had quite a long period of time where it was the same people working for the club, people like Mick Everett, Chris Parks. And a lot of that's changed now for varying reasons, but I think it's just such a good time to come together, celebrate what we've done, and try and carry that through the difficult times, use that to remind ourselves what a special football club we've got. And I say we, meaning us, the fans, and just try and, yeah, like, pull together. When you're having those rough times, that's our strength. And I think we need to remind ourselves of that. And this weekend is a perfect opportunity to do that.
Excellent. Well, that's a lovely way to end the show. Sue, thank you for those excellent words there. Yeah, make sure you reminisce properly this weekend, and hopefully we can do so with 3 points on Friday night as well. Thank you to everyone who's tuned in this week. This has been the Big Match Preview on Charlton Live. I hope you've enjoyed the show. Thank you to Sue and to Nathan for joining me this week.
Cheers, boys. And I usually say cheers, boys.
Cheers, boys. Good to speak to the pair of you. I'm Louis Mendes, and thanks for listening. We'll be back on Sunday to look back at the Cheltenham game. Hopefully, we'll have 3 more points on the board by then. We'll see you later.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.